Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Now, joining me today, we've had this guest before, and this time he's doing a speaking engagement in town here, and he will be at the Pocket Theater, and that's this Saturday here, 8 p.m. So we look forward to that. And so joining us is Kirk Nurmi. Thank you for being here, Kirk.
Thank you, Al. It's a pleasure to be here today.
So now, let's talk about this event first so people kind of get an idea. What exactly are you going to be speaking about?
Well, my talk is entitled Defending Your Greatness. And basically what it is when I went through the infamy that the Jodi Arias case brought about me and the cancer that I believe was a byproduct of all that infamy and the death threats and those kind of things, when all those things came together, I started thinking about the lessons in life that I had learned from it and the transformation I underwent when I decided I didn't want to practice law anymore, when I decided to step away from the profession. And immediately, as somebody who had written books, I wanted to write about the lessons I learned surviving cancer, but I learned it was so much more. It incorporated that infamy and those sort of things. And I started to realize how much unhappiness I was living with and how much unhappiness other people were living with. So my goal in Defending Your Greatness is to start reconnecting people to the joy that they've had in their lives at other periods of time when they were happy and when they were pursuing their greatness, who they wanted to be and what they wanted to do.
So when you talk about that, I have to wonder. So when you get into a place where you start to slide, like you say, people are living unhappy. Do you even notice this happening to you over a period of time?
You know, I don't think I did. I think we're kind of trained to some degree, though, to tolerate, right? To tolerate our work, to tolerate our job, to tolerate a lot of stuff in terms of in pursuit of the paycheck, right? So one of the things that when cancer came into my life, I really took a look at for the first time, and I was thought I was the only one who didn't ask myself this question. Are you happy? I asked myself that question. And that's an answer I posed to or a question I posed to people in my audience. Are you happy? And to start thinking about that life, because if you're not, then you're really starting to die in your life.
So when you mention cancer and you bring it up, and you kind of attribute it, it seems like, to the case you were doing for Jodi Arias, and that's sort of what led you into that. So the emotional unhappiness that you have from doing something like that, being, as you said earlier, trapped in that situation. Do you think that kind of leads on the cancer or the sickness that that happens to us in life?
Well, I think it was the stress involved. I mean, I've heard of articles that saying 75% of blood-related cancers are caused by stress. So it was the stress of the entire situation. I don't know that it was the unhappiness, because maybe I didn't realize it. But I think our unhappiness can manifest itself in that way. It can manifest itself in unhealthy habits, maybe drinking too much, eating too much, smoking too much, or just things that we use to satiate ourselves to not confront the fact that we're not happy with the direction in our lives. You know, one of the things, I gave a speech a while back, and one of the things I asked my audience is to think about that one thing that they wanted to do as a kid when they were 4 or 5, when they had that connection, they felt inspired, that realistic thing, not President of Mars type of thing. And everybody had a smile on their face when they thought about what it would be like to do that. And this speech happened to be on a Sunday. And I said, how do you feel about going to work Monday morning? And the mood in the room dropped, because nobody was excited about going to work Monday morning as much as they were that connection they had, what they really wanted to do. And so I think in that we start to recognize our unhappiness, and I think that we can take steps immediately to start bringing more joy into our lives. And that's what Defending Your Greatness is about.
So what are the key steps that you suggest for people? Quit their job?
Well, no, I say, that a modicum of adult responsibility must be honored. But it might mean quitting their job. It might mean changing their circumstances. It might mean a new relationship. It might mean pursuing something. It might mean going on the course towards a different job. It might mean taking steps towards what they really want to do and what they really want to be. And it could mean quitting. It could mean quitting their job. I mean, ultimately, that's what I did.
Well, how does this relate in your family situation? So, like, when you're in that mindset, so you're in a pretty negative place, things are going bad. How can you judge what things in your life are good and what things are bad at that time? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, when you're so overwhelmed.
I think it's a matter of getting some peace and clarity into it. One of the keys, when I give this talk, I give different keys that I think that people need to do. And one of them is self-care. And part of it is taking care of yourself beyond just the eating right and exercising every once in a while. And one of the things that I'm a big advocate of is meditation. So kind of stepping away and connecting towards that, so you have a sense of serenity. And I think that our heart is ultimately our connection to the universe, and we get guidance from that, from the universal intelligence, spirit, whatever you want to call it.
So how does that work for your family life? Like, how did it go there in that way? Like, how did this
in my personal situation, is that what you're asking?
It
was a matter of really sitting down and realizing that I wasn't happy and that I was stressed out and that I didn't want to live that way. And that was something, I guess, that I ultimately did on my own, because I remember having these inklings, not wanting to practice law and that sort of thing. So, and when I made the choice to go into the chemo chair, because I seriously debated whether I wanted to do that, knowing that the consequence would probably be death, ultimately I had to find reasons to live for myself, to be able to be a good partner to my wife and to be able to lift her up as well. So I think had I stayed in a miserable situation, I think that's a lot of the problems we see in relationships might be that, you're unhappy with your job, you're in debt, whatever it is, and that feeds into your relationship with your spouse or your kids or what have you. And that's where a lot of unhappiness can fester and continue and can kind of multiply into the family unit.
What do you think was the key element that was probably the one that was causing you the most pain at the peak?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know that I can isolate it, but I knew that when I confronted myself with that question, and I use the word confront because it's so easy to want to say yes to are you happy, because that doesn't mean change. And this might be an indirect answer to your question, but I broke it down in three components. I looked at my personal life, my family life, and my career. And both my personal life and my family life were, you know, A+, you know, 10 out of 10 type of thing. But the career wasn't. And I began to kind of look at that. And it was a hard thing to do because it had been something that I worked so hard to obtain. And I'd been practicing law at that time for about 15 years, and obviously 3 years of law school and everything it takes to get in there. So it was quite a shock to my system. But I realized when I confronted myself with that question, I was just assuming I was happy because I was following a path that I had started 20 years ago. So I really looked at those different components of my life. And so I broke it down and said, you know, the stress, the way I'm living, the lifestyle, how it's affecting me outside of the office, so to speak, was something that I wanted to change. Because the moment for me, I guess, was the idea that when I made the choice to go into the chemo chair, I said to myself, I promised myself that I wasn't going to live whatever remaining days I had on this planet in the same way I'd lived the prior 40-something years. And so that was kind of a shifting moment for me in terms of how I was going to live.
You know, when you talk about going into the chemo chair and the decision, maybe explain exactly what you mean by that for the listeners.
Well, this was about in the fall of 2015. So Jody Arias had been sentenced in April of 2015, and I was starting to feel like I didn't want to go back. I didn't want to go back. And I didn't really know how to process and digest those feelings because of what I said earlier about what I had put into getting where I was. But, you know, I attributed it to burnout. I took the summer off. My wife and I went on vacations. And then when I was about ready to go back to my law practice, that's when I noticed the lymph node under my right armpit was inflamed. And it was removed, and there was that stage 3 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma staring in front of me. And there had to be a real decision. I mean, we come to that point where we say, do I want to keep living? Do I want to keep living? And if so, for what for? And I really took an in-depth look at it, you know, and it had to be just for me. It had to be that guiding force that I wanted. I wanted more time on this planet to follow a mission, to follow a purpose.
So now that you've left the law behind you, how does it work for you now? Like, do you find that you miss the legal practicing? For what, I guess, for better terms, like, do you miss what you were doing compared to now?
Not at all. Not at all. You know, when you're in that world, when you're in a certain world, when you're in a certain high stress, high anxiety kind of world, maybe you don't notice you're in it, you know, the hypervigilance and things like that. So there's a bit of, I guess, withdrawals from the hypervigilance was the closest I ever came to regret. But, you know, the world of a criminal defense lawyer, especially when doing capital cases, is a world of murder and mayhem. And I don't miss going to the office and looking at autopsy photographs and reading, you know, psychological assessments and doing those sort of things. I don't. I like having control of my life, and I'm letting joy be the guiding force of what I do with my days.
Do you find yourself still following some of the news and some of the crime cases going on out there?
Well, sure. I mean, I get called in to do legal commentary on HLN or different shows occasionally. So when that opportunity comes to me, I'll take a look at it. But I'll take a look at different cases and offer my thoughts. But I don't find myself following a lot of true crime and that sort of thing.
I would say it would probably be hard to get out of your system after 15 years, just cold turkey. But
well, you know, I always used to tell my wife I didn't want to watch those legal shows because it was like being at work. And now that I'm not doing it at work, I'm maybe a little more open to it. But yeah, it's kind of hard in some ways, but it's refreshing in others because, you know, the one inevitable in life is change, or one of the inevitables is change. And I think change is good, and it helps in the evolution. So when I go on and talk about some horrific murder case or something like that, I'm thankful that I'm not in the position of that attorney.
So now, one thing I know I have to ask here, because I've been asked this a lot by listeners. Now, you wrote Trapped with Miss Arias, and you call it book one of three. And a lot of people online and different places have asked when book two is coming out. Is there, are you going to continue the books on that, or are you just going to walk away from that right now?
Well, right now, my only comment I offer on that, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that's the number one question I get all the time in my email or social media. And right now I'm just saying that I'm not making any announcements about that at this point in time. So Miss Arias's case is still under appeal, that sort of thing. And I'm writing another book that's correlated to my talk, that's more of a personal development self-help book. And we'll see what the future holds.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just, we get asked a lot.
Oh, I totally get it.
Still to this day. And I don't know what to tell people.
You tell them that Kirk Nurmi has made no announcements about it yet, but you never know.
Please stand by.
Please stand by. That's exactly right.
Well, that's kind of good. Did working on the first one, did it create a, did you have to relive a lot of the pain when you're writing a book about something that was not the best time in your life?
Kind of, and in that sense, I think it was therapeutic. I mean, I had this time off. I did a little bit of writing just for my own sake, you know, just kind of processing through everything. And then that's when I made the decision, thinking about when cancer came into my life, thinking about the lies Miss Arias told during her interview, her infamous bottom of the courthouse interview, where she talked about how it was all my fault and I did all these things and created this defense. That I decided that if I was going to die, that I wasn't going to let her words go unchallenged. So, and then in that sense, I guess it was further therapy, I guess, knowing that I was going to have this out before I left the earth.
Now, you don't have any, I guess you really don't have any ill will toward her now. What's your feeling now toward her and toward the whole case thing now, looking back at it?
Well, I think there's two different ways to look at that question. Everything happens for a reason. I try not to have any ill will towards her. I try not to think about Miss Arias at all, quite frankly. But I think in the larger scheme of things, when I talk about that time in my life and that whole, what I call the reality show, a trial that became a reality show, is one of the concerns I have. It's something I wrote in the New York Daily News right after the Arias trial, was this idea of trials becoming reality shows and how that affects our justice system, especially when we talk about social media and threats to people, threats to witnesses, that sort of thing, threats to jurors. So I look at that case in that way and think that it's also very seminal and important to how we're going to deal with our justice system in the social media era.
So just, you know, I want to get into your new book, but
sure.
Do you think that then that trials really shouldn't be viewed on TV like they are now? Or do you think that maybe they should film them, show them later? Or because I ask this of almost everybody that comes in, because of the effect that having it on TV 24/7 and the media, those nasty people, like me, being outside or in the courtroom and doing all these things, how can that not affect the job that people do?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's simple psychological observation effect, right? That people act different when they're being observed. It's an intangible thing that we can't quantify to see how that affects a trial. But it's not about nastiness so much. It's about of the media. It's about the external forces that could affect the trial and the thirst for information. I think when we talk about trials in the social media era, we're talking about a different animal than we are when we're talking about a reporter watching the trial and standing on the street corner reporting at the 5 o'clock news. Tweeting, live streaming, those sort of things are a completely different animal. And while I'm one typically to think that the court should be as open as possible, I think the federal courts have it right in prohibiting filming the trials and particularly the live streaming. I mean, when we talk about the social media era, that the Arias trial was live streamed across the world, that obviously makes it different than the reporter standing on the 5 o'clock news. So I think the courts have to consider shutting some of those things down, or at least limiting what reporters can do.
Yeah, it gets, because people, you know, they get an opinion then, and it just creates that atmosphere. Because how many cases have you seen where, like, you know, it's Michael Jackson or some of those cases where everybody already has an opinion, and then the verdict ends up opposite, and then you have an upset public because they don't see all of the evidence.
Yeah, I mean, that's the countervailing theory. But at the same time, do people, you know, do people take feelings as fact? And that's the other thing you can never prevent. If somebody has an opinion, they're probably going to reject facts they don't like and still have that discontent with a particular verdict.
Okay, so now you have a book out called Finding Your 2.0 Weight Loss, A Deeper Dive. So what's that book about?
Well, that book actually came out about 2 years ago now. The immediate number one question I got when the Arias trial was over was, how did I lose the weight? I got that all the time. I remember I had this surreal moment during the trial turning on Dr. Drew Pinsky's show and hearing him talk about whether I had gotten hair plugs and weight loss surgery, some kind of gastric bypass, because that was the social media scutterbutt. And it was at a time when I couldn't really respond. And so before I had written Trapped with Miss Arias, I kind of just wanted to, because weight loss is a big thing for people, right?
Yeah.
You know, and so I wanted to share what I had done. And after that, I revised that. It was just a little ebook, and I revised that into the book you referenced, to kind of incorporate the lessons I learned about food during cancer, some of those emotional connections, some of the reasons why we're eating this bad food, you know, to feel good. Like, you know, a lot of people listening probably had similar experience. Like, you get a good report card, you get to go out for ice cream, right? Mm-hmm. Or you had a rough day, you get to have a meal that's not so healthy and that's comforting and that puts a few pounds on you down the road, kind of thing. So the point of that being, I really wanted people to understand how I lost weight, that I didn't do it, you know, surgically. There's nothing wrong with that. But I mean, I'm saying I wanted people to know how to do it if they wanted that to be in their lives. And I wanted people to think about where they're at and why they're eating what they're eating, to have that kind of personal responsibility, but also a kind of connection to understanding why they're doing it so they can stop doing it.
And the hair plugs? No.
You know, I wish I had hair plugs. I could probably get an endorsement deal. But, you know, my wife started shaving my head in law school, and because the barbers in Laramie, Wyoming were a little scary. And so, it, you know, like many guys, I stuck with that for many years until she finally won out. And I have these long locks now.
Yeah, that's me too.
Yeah. I keep arguing one of these days I got to shave it again, but her constant refrain is no to that. So,
well, I can leave mine for a month and it doesn't grow. Just a little bit at a time. I'll tell you. But that's okay. I've been bald since I was 16.
So. Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, that's good, because I can buy liquor for everybody.
That's right.
So now, in your talk, do you get into that a lot, like weight loss, how we eat? Is it primarily focusing on how we are actually treating ourselves?
Well, how we're treating ourselves is definitely a subject of my talk, but weight loss isn't really a subject that I address specifically, other than when I talk about taking, you know, better care of yourself. But some of it begins, you know, with feeling good about ourselves, feeling worthy of where we're at, worthy of a healthier body, worthy of a job we like, all that sort of thing. So I start incorporating those things then that I think by.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
By default, the happiness we start to feel then brings us towards wanting to be healthier, wanting to be happier, wanting to show up for the universe to say that we're ready to do what we want to do and really embracing life. But probably the main thing that I want people to get out of my talk, other than to walk away with tools to become happier moving forward in their future, is the idea that this reality that no one's going to like to hear me say, but the fact that we're going to die. And no matter what we do, no matter how we work out or how much we sleep or what we do, but this idea of living with joyful urgency and trying to thrive in life instead of survive in life. Because when I was in the chemo chair, taking the chemo, not knowing whether it was going to work or not, the regret wasn't, oh, I didn't go to Italy or I didn't climb Mount Kilimanjaro or whatever, but it was how I spent my last 6 to 12 months. It was just that simple for me, my experience, and getting people to that point, because I had the experience, I caught a flu, my immune system isn't what it was, and I thought, well, if this is it, would I be happy with how I spent my last 6 to 12 months? And there was no objective success, there was nothing, but I was happy. And that was, I would have been happy with how I spent my last 6 to 12 months. And a lot of people maybe can't say that, which is sad, which I think leads to the weight and leads to the alcohol problems and that sort of thing.
Yeah, leads to things to numb us, I guess.
Right, that's exactly right. And the things that numb us might be things we don't even think of. It might be a fancy car to make us feel better about the job we don't like. It might be pornography. It might be whatever that we just see as a harmless distraction, but we're really not connecting with ourselves and what we're doing and why we should be here.
So no more Starbucks.
I didn't say that. Don't get Starbucks mad at me, but what I really don't need that. The only thing worse could be Amazon getting mad at me, right?
Yeah,
they run the world.
Yeah.
But no, it's not a matter of that, but it's a matter of making sure that those habits and what we do are still in alignment with our purpose and don't get carried away and don't become what we live for.
How do you think? So how does one find their purpose? Like what is the best thing for someone to do? So someone listening right now, they've been going through this. Maybe they're in kind of a mediocre or unhappy situation, and so how do they find that greatness?
Well, I think one of the simplest ways is, I love Deepak Chopra's question. I'll modify it a little bit. But this idea, what would you do with your time? What would your purpose be if you had unlimited time and unlimited resources? What would you do? And start asking yourself that and start looking at the things you want to do. What really inspires you? What motivates you? What moves you? They say, if you love what you do, you don't work a day in your life, right? So that sort of thing, kind of taking a look at, what you wanted to be. And maybe it was that thing you wanted to be as a kid before you reached that double digit mark, and for me, that actually was practicing law. And there's a lot of people that were in that somehow got assuaded away. So trying to look at who you are and your purpose, apart from all those practical considerations, like you talked about family and bills and those kind of things earlier, to try to look at that purpose, to try to look where that inspiration is. And most you can find a lot of that, I think, within your heart. And when we talk about meditation and connecting and taking that direction from the universe.
So let's talk about unchainedlives.com. So that's your website. What are people going to get when they go there?
Well, they're going to see where I'm speaking across the country. They're going to see my books. I post a lot about my appearances, that sort of thing. Some of my YouTube videos. I try as best I can to inspire people through YouTube. Now, I know not everybody can travel to Seattle to come see my talk or wherever I'm going. So I try to offer everybody a little bit of inspiration. And I think one of the important keys of that website is the domain name, that Unchained Lives, because we chain ourselves too much to practicality or to convention or to how our parents told us how to live. Like I was raised and I just had an emotional experience this afternoon visiting my grandparents' gravesite. Well, they grew up in the Depression, and to them, happiness was knowing where your next meal is going to be and having a steady job. And I had to be able to break through some of those things to reconnect with my life purpose. And all of us have those things, those traditions, those childhood imprinting that we need to move away from we need to unchain ourselves from in order to grow. And that's why I think Unchained Lives is the way we should be living. And what I offer on the website is different things. And when my new book comes out in January, Defending Your Greatness comes out in January, that'll be up there as well, because it's really, I tried to keep the website as simple as possible because I'm not interested in a complex mail list and all that stuff. I'm interested in connecting with people and giving them thoughts on how they can insert some joy into their life as soon as possible.
Do you see the world as a really difficult place right now, more so than 10 years ago?
I think that each one of us has a choice to make about how we let external influences affect us. So the difficulty is what we allow it to be. We can let our current political, socioeconomic climate, whatever you want to put to it, as a source of something we should worry about every day. Or we could think about it in a way that this is how it's supposed to be. There's perfection in the universe, and we have to live our lives. And, no matter what you think of the current state of politics, maybe that's there to inspire us to people to vote. Maybe it's there for us to take a look at who we elect as our leaders. Maybe it's to bring out some of these divisions in the country so they can be healed. There could be a lot of purposes for it. But, we can be affected by anything external if we allow it. I mean, we can be affected by what the president says, no matter who the president is, whether it was Obama or Trump, or we can be affected all week by the fact that the Seahawks aren't very good, right? Or the Mariners didn't make the playoffs after spending all that money, right? All that stuff. We can be affected by that, but in the end, it's transitory. And what stays is us. What stays is our life. And our happiness doesn't have to be affected by those external circumstances. So to get to your question, is the difficulty or simplicity of life really lies within us and our decisions that we make and how we react to things or how we respond to things.
So working on your new book, Defending Your Greatness, what was kind of behind that for you? Like what drew you to write that? And when it comes out in January, what is it you hope people are going to be getting out of that?
Well, yeah, when I survived cancer and became a cancer survivor in February of 2016, a lot of my inner voice and a lot of other people were suggesting that I write something, that I write a book or something about it. And I'd written a blog for a cancer website, cancer-related website. But I felt like I wanted to do more. I wanted to explain my cancer journey. And I'd written a couple manuscripts, and they weren't to my liking. I was getting frustrated with them. And then I started realizing, as I started going deeper inside myself, I started realizing that there was something more to it. It was more general lessons. So the Defending Your Greatness came out of that. So it's not just about the lessons of infamy and cancer and with the emphasis on cancer, but it's the infamy, the cancer, the stress, all those things, and how all of us could turn those things around. Because the cancer was just really a symbol of mortality. I mean, at 49 years old, I had not really contemplated my mortality. I was going to be hit by a bus, or it was going to be something I had to worry about 20 years down the road, right? And contemplating that mortality is something we should do because, like I said earlier, our time is limited. And if we're not living with joyful urgency, if we're hating our time here, if we're hating what we're doing, why are we doing that? I mean, whatever you believe in, whatever you believe put us here, did they put us here to be miserable, unhappy in our lives, or did they put us here to thrive and move beyond and help elevate the planet? So that's what I want people to get out of Defending Their Greatness, because I believe that each one of us was born great, and it's those practical considerations that we chain ourselves to, that we need to unchain ourselves from, is really what can restrict our happiness. Because going back to my situation, I could have fought the bar. I could have tried to retain my license. I could have done all that just out of ego. Just like, no, I'm not going to give this up. I earned this, that sort of thing. I didn't do anything wrong. But to what end? Because I didn't want the win. I didn't want the law license. You know, so that was a real great moment for me to realize I was unchaining myself from my past and moving in a direction that felt good to my heart. And that's why we're sitting here today.
So now today, so things are good. Do you still go through bad times and depression, and you still have rough periods now?
Sure, you bet. I mean, we all have emotions. It's not about rejecting emotions. It's about embracing them and understanding the lessons that we can get out of the emotions. So yeah, I have what we would call good times and bad times, but I typically try to refrain from putting that judgment on it and just embrace the feelings I have and try to get the lessons I have. Sure, I go through times where, you know, I wish, I was speaking at the Key Arena or Safeco Field and affecting 50,000 lives instead of the Pocket Theater, with all due respect. But, there's those kind of times. But I also realize that what is meant to be is being and is playing out.
So how has this changed you spiritually in that sense? Like, were you, because I get a sense of some sort of spiritualism. Were you religious before cancer, or like, how did that change your whole perspective on the universe as from before till now?
I think when I started writing Defending Your Greatness, I started looking at things in my life that happened with a new perspective. And I definitely feel like I'm a more spiritual person than I was before. I wouldn't call myself religious or hyper-religious or anything, but I think it definitely changed to a more spiritual practice, a more understanding of the presence of love or universal spirit that's around us, as opposed to just believing it's all happenstance. Because, you know, we can look at things in our lives. Like, I look at things in my life, like with the cancer and everything else, when I was going to go back to the practice of law, as really propelling me forward in a new direction. And I feel guided to this new direction. And by what or whom, I don't know. But there's definitely a sense of spirituality in that sentiment.
So who are your biggest influences?
Boy, there's several. One that stands out right away, because he's in town now, is Kyle Cease has been a big influence on me. He's been a personal teacher to mine, and I consider him a friend. And he talks a lot about following your heart and connecting to the universe as well. Wayne Dyer has been a big influence, someone, unfortunately, I did not have the chance to meet in life. And Sean Stevenson has also been a big influence. He's a prominent speaker that is also very connected with these issues and very heart-centered person. So I think I would turn to those three men as being huge influences in my life, in my journey, in my evolution or transformation.
So I should ask you what books you read.
you know, I'm starting to reread The Alchemist now. I recommend everyone to read Kyle's book, I Hope I Screw This Up, because there's a lot in there about our pressure to do everything perfect and the pressure we put on ourselves. And the book title kind of explains it, this idea of this perfection and we can't do anything wrong. And we're really should be joyful and embracing our lives.
So what have you got planned now? Are you going to continue this route that you're on now? Like you're going to be keep on writing books and speaking more and kind of get the word out, I guess?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, it's a matter of sharing these lessons now. And you know, when people go on my website, they'll see I'm coming to L.A. in March. I'll be in San Francisco in August and who knows where. But that's basically it. I mean, writing my books and speaking and doing interviews like this or anything I can to help people get happier. You know, that to me, and this will be another political reference, but, you know, Michelle Obama said that, you know, our number one health problem is obesity. And as much as I love her, I would disagree and say that our number one problem is, as a world and as a nation, is unhappiness. And we see a lot of anger in our politics. We see a lot of division, that sort of thing. So I feel called to do whatever I can to help people bring that joy in and to understand that we are all connected and that we have to embrace each other rather than reject each other.
I wonder, you know, that we're not political, but I wonder if the current political situation and even the vote and having Trump in, I wonder if that was in a large sense a way of trying to fix our unhappiness, even though it's not necessarily the right answer, almost like drinking or eating the bad food. We vote for something that, I don't know how I'm trying to say it, but you know what I mean? It's kind of a punishment in a way.
Well, he may give voice to the anger and unhappiness that a lot of people are feeling.
Right.
I think that's part of it right there, right? Because yeah. he was the outsider. He wasn't the politician. And a lot of people were upset with politicians. And regardless of his positions, conservative, what have you, obviously he's a very big cult of personality type figure, right? A very divisive figure. And the point of that being, yeah, you know, there's giving voice to that anger because a lot of people, I think, don't feel heard in their lives. You know, they're riding the bus, they're going to a job they don't hate, and they're upset. They're upset about it. And rather than work on themselves, they vote for someone who they think shares that anger. And that's what I think we need to work against. Not him specifically, but work against that division and work against that anger.
So what if you had to give one recommendation for people out there listening that are driving in a rush hour, and what would it be like when they're upset or they're having a what? Where should someone go? What should they do first thing?
Understand that whatever is going on is only temporary. It's not connected to who they are. It's not going to be a lifelong situation, and it you know, I guess let me put this another way, maybe a more articulate way. One of the things that I tell myself now is that if I'm not going to worry about whatever it is that I'm unhappy about on my deathbed, why worry about it now? And those people in those cars getting cut off and wanting to show the middle finger to the guy in front of them or whatever, is that going to matter on their deathbed? Are you going to worry about that on your deathbed? And if you're not, it's probably not worth worrying about it now.
Yeah, it's very, very true. So now you're doing a couple of shows here. So, of course, you're doing Seattle here this Saturday, the 13th, at 8 p.m. at the Pocket Theater. And so you said you got a couple other shows lined up?
I do. I'm March 9th at the Covina Center for the Arts. I don't have ticket information on my website yet, but after this performance or around the beginning of the year, we'll be getting that ticket information up on Unchained Live. And in San Francisco, it's a small theater called the Piano Fight Bar in San Francisco. And that'll be on Labor Day weekend. I'm really looking forward to that. I haven't been to San Francisco in a while, so.
And that sounds like a good place.
Yes. Piano Fight. I have to see that.
So now the website is unchainlives.com. And that's the best place for them to go to connect with you or if they have stories or.
Right. If they have stories or whatever, you can email me through that website. And like I say, there's those, your listeners that are hearing this or are interested in joining me at the Pocket Saturday night can find a link to tickets on that website as well. So that's the best place to keep up with me apart from, you know, social media and that sort of thing.
It's always fun. Well, our guest has been Kirk Nurmi. Of course, we knew him as the defense attorney for Jody Arias a few years back. But now he's on a new new venture, and very interesting. And I hope I see all the listeners at the show. We'll be there on Saturday. Pocket Theater, 8 p.m. Kirk, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Al. A pleasure.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com. houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.